Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a snowy 24 degrees in the middle of winter storm. What are they calling it? Stella. Here in upstate New York, they've put us under a state of emergency and told us to be afraid, be very afraid. It's pretty crappy out, but I don't think they need to call out the troops just yet. They did cancel school again today, so that would be 3 days off in the last five, which is pretty amazing since we can go school years on end without ever having a day off. But hey, I don't know, the cats are happy because they have someone to play with. So, where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Our New Reality and the Rise of the Machine in the Twilight Zone. I don't know. I had to come up with something yesterday, but we mentioned the Twilight Zone a couple days in a row. And I think it's been quite pertinent to Serve Man was the one, and the Obsolete Man was the other two that are highly recommended. I linked them in the notes from the show yesterday. But we have been talking about, yes, our new reality. That is the coming of robots taking all of our jobs, AI moving into our daily lives, moving into the workplace to replace you and me, and how this technology is going to find its way inside of us eventually. Now, we've kind of outlined that before. The first step would be your devices. The second step would be wearables. And the third and final step is insertables. And we found out that implants are coming pretty quickly. And how interestingly, over the last few days, stories have come out about all three of those different forms of technology. We had a story come out just a few days ago, exactly a week today. This is where we ended the show yesterday. Warning, your new digital world is highly addictive. By the way, someone please tell me, since they did this forced upgrade for Skype that made Skype so damn unreliable now, it also screwed up my audio and it screwed up my levels. And I apologize for over the last few days. My show has sounded like way overdriven with the mic. So, someone please give me a sign. Is it still like that? Because I did some adjustments last night and I'm trying to keep my mouth at least a few inches away from the mic instead of I get up all close and personal when I get excited and I start. So, just let me know if it's too crackly and loud. I'll back off the volume a little bit more. But I get really disappointed when the show is over and I'm trying to do my notes and it's just so distorted that I can't even listen to it for a few minutes. So I'm sure that I mean, I'm used to my voice. You guys just pretend you are and come be nice and listen, but I don't want to hurt anyone's ears and make them bleed. All right, anyway, so let me know, somebody in chat. I know there's a delay. Warning, your new digital world is highly addictive. Ding-a-ling-a-ling, we've been saying this for, oh, quite a number of years here. I have found the same exact conclusion in studying people in my own household, particularly my child. All right, guys, thank you very much. Yeah, I don't know. It keeps cranking up the volume in Skype, and I keep turning it back down. Don't ever have it set for auto because then it screws it all up. But all right, so we're good. Yeah, so I've been doing the experimentation at home. I started noticing with my daughter when she was real little that we would start to have attitude problems even if we watched a very teeny tiny little bit of TV. And we were talking educational TV, not even SpongeBob at that point. But then it even was more pronounced when it went from the TV to playing on the computer for a little while. And again, we limit computer time and it can turn into a big battle at times. But I have seen for a very long time, and you guys know I've had these talks on the show just about the complete and utter turnaround in Munchkin's personality after she's been on one of these devices versus, hey, we get away for a few days in the summertime, we'll take off. The internet is very sparse. I was gonna say sparse. And you can go a couple days without being online. It's very easy to get to places where there's no connectivity at all. There's no cell phones. There's no messages. And I don't let her play with any of that stuff. But I'm just saying, I noticed a long time ago that there was something up with these devices and children. And then we discovered there was a documentary put out by a doctor who also had children. I don't remember if she was from Harvard or Stanford. She was from one of the Ivy League schools. And she put out a documentary called Screenagers. And they've been doing private screenings across the country to raise awareness for the dangers of dopamine, children, and devices. And we discovered a long time ago when we started digging into dopamine, and we've done quite a number of shows on dopamine. Dopamine is also related, we found out through Dr. Simon, to the narcissistic personality disorder, and we started digging in deep there too. We discovered that children who play lots of video games have a very overactive dopamine center in the brain. And as they play more video games, they become more and more addicted and they require more and more dopamine. And when they've done scans of children's brains with dopamine addictions to video games and they compared them to the brains of psychopaths, oh, guess what, people? It actually exactly equates to what Dr. Simon had been saying all this time, that we are grooming a whole new society that is full of this psychopathic behavior disorder. Now, we used to joke that the world is run by psychopaths, but it's not a joke anymore. We are creating a generation with psychopathic tendencies that will be in charge of this world. And if anybody knows someone with that disorder, you'll know they're not afraid of anything and they love the thrill. They need the next dose of excitement to be able to get them to tomorrow. Sitting around and being bored is not part of their game. And so they got to keep finding new and novel ways to get that newest dose to give them a boost, because otherwise they get depressed. It's very uncomfortable not getting your dose of dopamine. We discover that dopamine is the addiction chemical, and that is for a lot of addictions across the board. And it also is produced not only by gambling or cocaine or sex or video games or when that little ding happens on your smart device to tell you you have a message. We also discovered that sugar and high fructose corn syrup, which is of course in all of our foods, high fructose corn syrup made with genetically modified corn, no less, loaded with glyphosate, that we're pumping into our kids, that's causing this cascade of Western diseases, as the glyphosate is damaging our cytochrome P450 enzyme. We've talked about that many times before. I'll put that study into the notes. You'd be very interested at how it's all connected. But yes, it is all connected. The fall of Western man, I think, is what is happening right now. This, I don't think, is an accident either. So listen, ding-a-ling, a new story after that Screenager documentary warning parents of the dangers of dopamine and devices and children. We covered three stories back a while ago, last show we did, show or two, on dopamine, showing that there were three different cases. One was a younger kid, one was more of a teenager, and one was an adult. That one kid ended up at a mental institution for a couple different times from their addiction. I've talked to friends. We have teenagers right now who got sucked into that machine playing video games. And they are met with violence if they try to get their children off the computer. And so They have given up, and they allow their kids to sit in their room 24/7. They don't do much of anything. They don't even up around the house. They argue, and they cannot be pried from their chair. I mean, guys, this is what we're creating. And there's a very large number of children right now in this next generation that are all afflicted with the same addiction. That doctor out of, I don't know, I think it was Stanford, it was one of them, it was one of the Ivy League schools that did screenagers. One of the things that she had discussed is about how dopamine seems to have even more amplified effects on the brains of children than they do in adults. And I had postulated this a long, long time ago when I kind of looked back on our development as children back in the 60s and the 70s. We really didn't have electronic devices. We had maybe some handheld games eventually in the 80s. We had Simon and that Merlin speaking spell-y things, push button, but there wasn't much of anything. Our very first video game was Pong. But Pong, again, it was just too, it was a black screen, so you didn't have all the flashing lights to cause seizures. But it was a black screen with two paddles, two white lines that just bounced a digital square between each other, and you guys played ping pong. So it didn't cause that much of a dopamine addiction, but I can tell you, I remember when we got that game. My Uncle Kenny bought it for us for Christmas, I believe. And then Kenny stayed for a couple days on end, and we played marathon Pong games. So I guess maybe there was some sort of dopamine button that was pushed. And my uncle was one of those people who required lots of dopamine. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, he did some nutty things, but he loved that game. But I'm telling you, it's gotten way worse now. I mean, we are merging this 3D world with reality. We are allowing our kids to get addicted through this chemical reaction called dopamine to these devices. And we're making them so ultra-realistic, so full-blown HD 3D, that we literally are creating the Matrix. Add to that now the 3D VR goggles. That eventually with 5G, we're going to be streaming at a gigabit per second from the sky ubiquitously. You could go anywhere you want. You will be literally sucked directly into that matrix. And your reality, the day they allow those nanobots to get into your neocortex, we already found out from Kurzweil, to be able to literally switch your input, your sensory input from your physical world now to some sort of simulated virtual reality world would really just entail flipping a few switches in that neocortex to change your input from internally to externally. And they could even flip not only your vision, but your smell and your touch senses. We read that whole story a while back where he talked about how that could be done. And that's beyond frightening. We could be snatched out of this reality and not even realize it. At some point in this not too distant future, you know, you start getting really there. Uncooperative consumers. And we're just going to lull you back to sleep and send you back into a world that you liked back 20, 30, 40 years ago. Don't worry about it. AI is good for you. All right. So let's get to this story because I got a lot I want to go over today. Warning, your new digital world is highly addictive. Technology is now designed to make it, quote unquote, irresistible, argues psychology and marketing professor Adam Alter. Now, we ended the show with this yesterday, so let's see if we can get through this, because there's an entire progression that I want to hit today. Science has learned many lessons about what makes something addictive, and now this knowledge is being used by our tech business to gain our attention and to keep us coming back for more. In his new book, Irresistible, New York University Associate Professor of Marketing Adam Alter argues that society is experiencing the beginnings of an epidemic of a behavioral addiction. And remember, ding-a-ling, Tommy Insel, going from the National Institute of Mental Health to Google's Verily to cure and diagnose mental disorders. And addiction is one of those big things that was funded as part of the 21st Century Cures Act to find a cure to. Of course, it was opioid addiction. Any type of addiction. Opioids also interact with that dopamine portion of the brain. I think they're going to come for us. I think they're going to use this as a way to get inside. And anybody who uses their devices on a daily basis have this dangling carrot reaction already. We have been trained well, like Pavlovian dogs. So this could become very epidemic, and it could have dangerous and far-reaching implications for all of us. So first, we typically think of an addiction as a response to substances, including drugs, alcohol, and nicotine. But humans can also develop addictions to a wide range of experiences, too. And that's like I said, though. But it all comes down to that same area of the brain that creates dopamine. Recently, for example, people have developed clinical addictions to video games. Ding, ding. Social media platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. And even Google's augmented reality glasses called Google Glass. And since addiction is essentially the drive to engage in an immediately rewarding behavior, despite negative long-term consequences for mental, physical, social, or financial well-being, it can arise in response to both substances like cocaine or alcohol or many other things, high fructose corn syrup, or behaviors such as sex or your devices. Ding-a-ling. Second, we tend to think of addiction as a problem that affects certain kinds of people, whereas others are in some sense immune. We refer to quote-unquote addictive personalities, for example, to describe people who are prone to addiction. And guys, I really think it's a genetic trait. I have always deemed myself as a quote-unquote addictive personality because it is, you know, like my mom's friend. She was always able to, like, you know, have a glass of wine on an evening out with the girls and smoke 10 cigarettes that night and then not even think about them for the next 3 months until the next time the girls all get together and they go have a couple glasses of wine. Well, that's not like me. I'm one of those people, if I stop smoking, you better keep them as far away from me as you can, because the second I smell one or the second I smoke one, and I mean, this is without putting on a patch or anything like that, just me normally, you know, I'm going to be wanting one, and I'm going to get pretty ornery if you don't give me one. You know, there's been evidence in my family, like you talked about my uncle and a few other family members. We all have that same, you know, everybody's poison is different, but we all have that same button. And this is what led me to my studies to narcissism and psychopathy and Dr. Simon. I hear Dr. Simon actually is a guest originally on Michael Cross's Unlock the Door show talking about narcissism. That's how I got all tipped off about this. But he'd even talked about dopamine. And that's kind of how I got sent in that direction to start researching. And I'm telling you, it even gets deeper. This whole tie-in with technology and how technology is grooming us and requiring anyone who gets addicted to require more dopamine. This is just fueling this evil cycle that is pulling our children into the machine. In truth, we are all potential addicts. And I'm going to tell you, this wasn't an accident. You go back and you search into the research annals of the scientific community on their research for dopamine in the human brain, you're going to find out that it goes way, 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 way back. And they've been looking at how to manipulate that chemical for a very long time. So this, you know, they act like this is a big surprise. Oh, no. It's not a big surprise. I think it's happening exactly as it was intended. In truth, we are all potential addicts waiting for the quote-unquote right circumstances to trigger our own personal addiction. For some people, that experience is loneliness and access to a video game that connects them to millions of other humans around the world. Oh, open your arms, people. For others, that experience is depression and a social network that numbs their emotions by presenting an endless feed of information. And even, I'm gonna tell you, I think this is my new addiction, and I think this is the healthiest one I've had yet, and that is being drawn to seeking information. Seeking and finding information feeds you dopamine. I think that's why I can get into my research frenzies. But you know what? It's pretty healthy compared to some of this other stuff. Even if I'm sitting in front of a computer searching, 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 I'm at least feeding my brain lots of good evidence and research to connect those dots. And then I can at least share those with you. So I'm trying to put it to a good use. For others, still, it might be self-doubt coupled with access to devices that count how many steps they take each day. Ding, 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 ding. And they're taking advantage of that as well, like we talked. The Fitbit, that is that intermediary step between your handheld device, your wearable, and your implantable. And we read stories last week in regards to smart dust, how this new neural dust developed by DARPA and the University of California, Berkeley, is going to be an implantable Fitbit. They even said it. So, like I said, this has been very planned this way. This is how we are being taken over by the body snatchers. They are trying to steal our children and suck them into the machine. So the day will come when those children will so be required to get that dopamine dose 24/7. That even wearables will not be sufficient any longer, and they will go for the implantable. There was a survey that I found yesterday that actually looked and asked across the board who would be willing to step up and get a brain implant. And guess what? Apparently, us uncooperative consumers are still out there en masse because it looks like the American public wants nothing to do with brain implants right at this point in time. And I gotta say, kudos, good on you, because you do not want to step right up. Anyway, for still others, it might be self-doubt coupled with access to a device that counts how many steps they take each day, which encourages them to exercise more and with more each passing day until they continue to exercise through their debilitating injuries. Or just to give themselves a better body image. I mean, typically you're going to start an exercise routine if you feel like crap. And if you feel like crap and you start exercising, guess what? You start to feel better. Starts to produce some of those good brain chemicals that then encourage you to do more. So, some estimates suggest that up to half of the developed world now has one of these so-called behavioral addictions, which is suggesting that addiction is a problem for the masses and damn good thing because there's all kinds of mad science research now going in to how to push buttons in the brain to cure addiction. Damn it. And as they're rolling out this ubiquitous 5G in the sky with these little CubeSats and these internet drones to get internet to the continent of Africa, because we have all those poor Africans that don't have access to the internet or smartphones. Hey, guess what? We're going to even create a bigger addiction problem. So look out, African continent, because here it comes. How disturbing is this? And what bothers me is that this is every single thing we've been talking about. It's that push button. DARPA has been manipulating that push button for years. They've been playing with it in mice. They've been tinkering with it in the name of creating super soldiers. That project is not fantasy. They want to be able to override fear and alarm in the brain. And they can push that dopamine button. That dopamine button gives you the thrill, the anticipation. It makes your heart start beating and gets you excited. And it is a big motivator. So when did you start to see this as a real problem? Well, this author started to see it as a problem near the end of the first decade of the 2000s, shortly after the release of the first generation of iPhones in 2007 and the iPads in 2010. Games and social networks have been around for many years. I'm going to say, actually, bullshit on the iPad. I don't know. 2010 seems kind of late. Maybe, but I'm pretty sure iPads were a little bit before that. Games and social networks have been around for many years, but iPhones and iPads deliver these experiences in an irresistible portable package. Now millions of people can play games anywhere, connecting with other people anywhere, accessing their email from anywhere. Accessibility is a major component of addiction. You can't be addicted to what you cannot reach with ease. And I'll tell you my own experimentation. We just turn off access. There is no television. There is no computer. If we start getting an attitude, and I don't put up with that attitude because I'm telling you, it is a complete and utter personality change that I see in my child. And it can only be given in little sippy cups. We'll watch a science program for an hour after dinner. That doesn't cause issues. But you watch a movie. I mean, it depends on what movie. Indiana Jones is pretty okay. Star Wars, pretty okay. Anything with Harrison Ford typically is pretty okay, but that's okay. It's because I like Harrison Ford. But I don't know. I'm trying to think of what movies. And you start watching TV shows like marathons. I'm trying to think of what show. Maybe one of those Josh Gates. We used to do the archaeology underworld or something where he'd go exploring. And those are good, but I'm going to tell you what, if they're on in a series, trying to get them to turn it off when the next one starts typically ends up in a battle of words, and then it turns into a big issue that gives me a headache. I just really hate it. And it's, this is just a problem that has been going on for now probably 6, 7 years that I've been battling. And see, my husband doesn't see it the way I do. So it really causes a little bit of tension in the household, because the second I turn my back, he's like, yeah, you can sneak your little game if you want. It really pisses me. Don't even get me started. Because it just causes major issues. And I don't know how many studies I got to stick in front of his face. But again, here's another one that proves that I was absolutely correct. So now millions of people can play games anywhere and connect with other people anywhere and access their mail from anywhere. And accessibility is a major component of addiction. You cannot be addicted to anything you cannot reach with ease. So portable screens began to drive many forms of behavioral addiction. And now you guys understand why over the summer I go disappear for a few days at a time, because it's called getting off grid to detox my child's brain. And when this author spoke to Kimberly Young, a psychologist who treats an internet addiction at a hospital in Pennsylvania, and they also have these internet addiction camps for children in China, by the way, she agreed that, quote, the biggest changes by far were the introduction of the iPhone and then the iPad in 2010. Second to the iPhones and iPads, Young said, was the rise of internet speeds in the mid-2000s. And with infrastructure and a new vehicle for driving content came new programs that were easier to test, design, and sell en masse. And guys, remember, I told you about when I worked in distribution way, way, way back in the 90s. And we saw that very first-person video game with the flight simulator that was skewed in our system, with the vendor of origin being the Department of Defense. And exactly 18 years later, I discovered, 18 years later, we had these entire facilities of very well-trained 18-year-old drone pilots who were very adept at using joysticks and gamepad controllers to fly aircraft remotely and drop bombs. So how interesting is that? Don't tell me that there was not an agenda. And not only did it train these kids over their entire lifetimes of playing these video games, we also found out that in some of these gaming systems where we've had suspected spying coming from Alphabet agencies, that I believe it was the Xbox that was one of them that was paying attention to statistics as to who some of these best pilots were. It was just not too long ago, back when Paul Joseph Watson was talking about the Xbox and some of the X-rated cameras that it apparently has, and they can look through those cameras. It's very disturbing to some of these things that they are doing to our children, and we don't even have half a clue. I was saying before, when we grew up in the 70s and the 80s, I didn't get my first computer until 1982. I think my Pong game was probably in 78. We were looking into the history of Texas Instruments last night, and TI is responsible for a lot of the electronics, the familiarity with electronics that we have today. Remember, they created the very first personal calculator, like way, 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 way back. They are still pretty heavy duty into creating semiconductors. But I was talking about my very first little calculator guy. It was called Little Professor. We looked him up last night. Couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, there he is. Little Professor was this little handheld calculator thing that had an owl on it with a graduation hat. I don't know if anyone else had a Little Professor, but he used to quiz you on your multiplication tables. I remember laying in bed. Do my multiplication tables. I was actually really good at them too. But I mean, even back in those days in the 70s, Merlin, there was that red handheld. It looked like a portable phone and it would do these patterns. And you do, 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 do. You had to remember them. Do, 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 do. And then Simon was the same thing. That was the round one that looked like the spaceships with the four colors, the big buttons. And gotta tell you too, those are my favorite games. And here I am as an adult, and one of my skills with a Z I have discovered is pattern recognition. I don't know, I've always had a Rain Man skill for being able to do that or recognize things I've seen before, be able to do a snapshot in my brain and then remember when I've seen something again and connect it to something else I saw, 10 years ago. But I'm wondering if that's why I enjoyed those games, or did those games, playing them at a young age, actually help program and intensify those pathways in my brain? Good question. Was I groomed, or did I enjoy it because I had a propensity for that? But we did not have the full immersion back then like we do now for children. You put a child that age, 10, 12, 14 years old, in front of a game, and that kid is already going to start down a really slippery path. And as they are developing into young adults, we are tying them to this very strong physiological addiction cycle. And like I said, the doctor who created the documentary called Screenagers pointed out how in children, that addiction chemical is way stronger and way more devastating in children exposed to it than adults. It is amplified in children. So we are ruining, literally ruining, our next generations of humans. They're going to want that machine. They're going to want it inside of them. They are not going to be resistant consumers anymore like we are. We're Luddites. At least many of us are. We don't want the robots to take all of our jobs. We don't want universal basic income. We want to be able to earn a good day's pay. We want to be able to work. We don't want to push those buttons to make George Jetson world appear. We don't want implants. Can you give some examples of the kinds of techniques the designers of these games used to get us addicted? Well, much of the process is driven by A/B testing. Designers will release several versions of a game. For example, they will track how long players will engage with the game before ending a session. Remember, I told you they are tracking stats on these games. They might find, for example, that the mission, and again, military games, is more engaging if it involves rescuing a person rather than involving finding a lost object. And so they will design new missions that involve rescuing people, and they will stop producing missions that involve finding objects. Then they might discover that a particular color of an arrow, or just like the good old Pavlovian dog, a ding sound encourages a particular action. And so they will use those colors and sounds in preference to others. It's all a big psyop, people. They've been manipulating us for a very long time. And it's interesting that this guy that's writing this book is a marketing professor, because these are some of the same techniques and people who learn from Bernays and how to get us to want to keep up with the Joneses to buy all these things that we didn't need. These are some of these same tools that he utilized to manipulate our brains to get us into this consumer-based me, 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 instant gratification society. And guys, this is all part of the same thing. This instant gratification, this me, 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 is part of this psychopathic, narcissistic personality disorder that requires dopamine. Over time, with enough testing, they develop the most addictive, weaponized version of the original game. And notice they call it a weaponized version because it is against your children. A version that combines the game's most compelling features to produce a package that is very hard to resist. And then we jack the price up and make it $49.99 for a video game, damn it. And then the kids demand them at Christmas and their birthdays so they could sit in their room even more and not come out to help clean the cat boxes or do anything else for that matter. By the way, I missed it. Don't know how I did, but it was Bernays's birthday this past weekend. I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday, but happy unbirthday to you, Bernays. You were the one who started screwing up this country at the behest of the government. He was aiding them to help start stoking the economy after the war. So they asked this author, how do you see this weaponization of programs playing out on a societal level? What are its political implications? Well, guess what? The implications are huge. For example, behavioral addiction, and remember, problem reaction solution. Because now we have this entire society of people with quote unquote mental disorders, behavioral disorders that they're going to have to come cure. They've been doing all this wondrous taxpayer funded research on the Brain Initiative, so they know where all those push buttons are. DARPA's been a part of it as well. Sprinkle funding, everyone. So put in a seatbelt, people, because Tommy Inzel moved right over to private industry. And they're going to start rolling some of these apps out on your addictive devices to get you addicted to diagnosing your behavioral addictions. But the implications are huge. For example, behavioral addiction has the capacity to damage relationships between friends and romantic partners by replacing face-to-face interaction with impoverished online interactions. We've seen that already. Teenagers that all get together and then sit with their backs to each other and talk online and don't go outside, and the kids don't play anymore. They all sit inside. Also, it'll make people less healthy by encouraging them to exercise too seldom and making the computer screens more attractive. And of course, yes, your kids won't help around the house anymore. There will be no mowing the lawn. And Johnny doesn't have any friends except for the weirdos online. And then sometimes too often, by inducing them to over-exercise with the aids of fitness watches, that will encourage you to keep going and escalate your activity as you compete with friends online. We talked about that too. This whole new way that they are going to start pushing this 21st century healthiness, white roomed, white walls, Buck Rogers type of future that we are envisioning where we have biosensors tracking, bagging, and tagging us at a cellular level to make sure we could keep costs down by keeping you healthy, Johnny. And you need this little implant to be able to monitor you 24/7, just like a car, to make sure that everything is operating within parameters. I mean, this is literally where this is steering us to. And this behavior will also encourage them to overspend on experiences like in-app game purchases and online shopping. I mean, look at it's been a big plan. It really has been, and it's taken us now to where we are at the brink of a societal destruction. At this brink where nobody is paying attention and they are all being sucked into the machine. And we're helpless. And everyone is still embracing their devices, holding on to them. They're like, oh my God, we don't want an EMP, guys. An EMP. I think the time has actually passed where an EMP would even help. Because now we've let some genies out of the bottle. They got all kinds of things that are going on right now, and it's only going to get worse as technology moves at an exponential rate. Back to the story, in time, most of us will also own virtual reality goggles. And the temptation to spend time in an idealized world, especially as ours is falling apart, will almost always trump the temptation of living in the imperfect offline world. And I talked about this with TV. We saw this happening already with television and reality TV. I think that was kind of the interim between the reality world that we live in and this virtual reality world they're trying to suck us into on our devices. Reality television allowed you to escape and care about what the Kardashians were doing, not about how Nana was doing in her rehab facility after breaking her hip. No. Let's pay attention to something that's more exciting, that is more trashy than our real boring existence. And they really got people used to caring about things that really don't have any real importance in your daily life. They're complete distractions. And I mean, I'm not saying distraction is bad. I need a little distraction every once in a while because reality is such a slap in the face. But when it becomes an addictive, chemically driven behavior to take you there, and it is happening on a large scale, it really has been weaponized, like they said. Why have a potentially boring conversation with a real person when you can spend time in a virtual world doing exactly what you like to be doing, from playing games to sitting on a beach in Spain to having, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, virtual sex, and that is going to be the next dangling carrot. These 3D full immersion virtual reality goggles and something like Pornhub. They already launched some applications there. And remember, this is only the beginning. It's only going to get better and more realistic. The political implications are also profound if the problem becomes more severe, as it is sure to do with the advent of cheaper, better, faster, more sophisticated virtual reality experiences. The government will be forced to consider regulating tech-driven behavior. Ting-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Step right up, 21st Century Cures Act that was passed in December of 2016. With the line item that talks about non-invasive neurological surveillance for people with mental disorders. Guys, here it comes. This is going to give them the rights to get inside your brain because guess what? Every single one of us is going to be diagnosed with a mental illness on a spectrum. Korea and China, I talked about this. China already has their boot camps for internet addiction. Have already considered so-called Cinderella laws prohibiting children from playing games between midnight and 6 in the morning. Governments from around the world will have to consider similar laws as the social, financial, psychological, and physiological consequences of addictive technology rise in severity and impair a greater portion of the population. So there you go, people. It is a real disorder. It is coming. All the stuff we've talked about dopamine and the devices, has really happened. So we've discussed how we now have this progression. They have gotten us addicted to our devices. Now we need it even more than 24/7. We need it in our wearables. We need it in our Fitbits. Well, Regina Duggan, back when she was at Google, she moved from DARPA to Google. She was working that ATAP division that was working on things such as embeddables and wearables. And they had partnered with Levi's, if you remember. They were going to make this connected Levi's jackets. It was called Project Jacquard. Well, ding, ding, brand new news story out 2 days ago, March 12, 2017. The march moves forward. Regina Duggan has since left Google in the ATAP program. She's gone to work for now Microsoft, no, not Microsoft, Facebook, in their Moonshots division, in a secretive building, working on some new project and how to get into your child's brain. But good old DARPA Dan, that we talked about quite a number of times now, DARPA Dan, who said that nothing on the internet is secure. Oh, yes, that DARPA Dan. DARPA Dan is now in that ATAP division where Regina Duggan left from. And Google has announced their Project Jacquard with Levi's. And they, I think, are rolling these suckers out. Wearable technology. And what better way to get you used to wearables? Make it a jean jacket, which is, of course, an American staple. And make it Levi's, because we all got to be better than the Joneses. Got to make sure we got that label. Let's make sure there's a little Levi's tag on it. Wearable technology once promised to take us away from our phones and to improve our lives in subtle but powerful ways. Right, get rid of that phone, chuck it, just put it in your clothes. The reality, however, has been a bit less exciting. More often than not, devices have been hampered by clunky design and bad taste, resulting in products that are expensive, unnecessary, and ugly. And yet these drawbacks that highlight just how interesting Levi's new connected smart jacket is, ding ding, and why it's a bolder and perhaps more promising form of wearable technology. And I think when we first looked at this program a few years ago, they were talking about making these antenna, really fine antenna like threads, and they were going to weave them into clothing. This jacket, which just showed up at Austin's SXSW this week, is made in partnership with Google's Project Jacquard, a division within the company's Advanced Technology and Projects, ATAP group, ding ding, again, where Regina Duggan used to be and DARPA Dan is now. And the Jacquard group pioneered conductive fibers that are woven directly into clothing so that motions you make on the left cuff of the jacket sleeve register as touch inputs as if it were a screen. And right, they talked about that originally. You can zoop, zoop down your arm, tap, tap, soon it'll be, tap your chest a few times, saying computer, like in Star Trek. Originally due out in spring, Google and Levi's delayed the product to sometime this fall, but it is coming, so don't worry about it. The conductive fibers are flexible and can be washed, though the actual electronics are handled by a cufflink, which you will have to remove before you wash the jacket. So hope they have replacement parts for that, because I'd be really bad at trying to remember to take that off. Maybe that's a good thing. We've been going through continuous consumer wear testing to refine this jacket and its abilities, says Google spokesman. We want to be sure that we take the time to get it right and provide a really great experience for people wearing the internet connected jacket. So there you go, people. They're going to roll it out now to this next generation. It is going to be damn swanky. I think they better watch the price point. Remember, I told you to get us to embrace these technologies. They got to get the right price point when they roll this out. It looks like right now it's going to be $350 a jacket. That's kind of a pricey jacket. you better be selling it through your cell phone providers for a monthly fee. Here, you can get your new Android, your new iPhone, or your new Levi's jacket for just $19.95 a month added to your cell phone bill. All right, so how do we then get to these next steps? Well, we've talked about nanobots in your blood, and of course, step right up, people, because it's going to be all in the name of curing cancer. We had predicted that back just a few years ago. I honestly could not see how they would get anyone to step up to start getting little nanobodies in their blood when none of this had really been tested, and had postulated that they would have to offer something like a cure for cancer, like the panacea, to get people on their knees begging for the solution. Well, that's exactly what they did. And we've seen clinical trials now that pesky FDA has been shooed out of the way by the 21st Century Cures Act, that all those congressmen are going to make bazillions on with their investments in biotech. But there is another way that will allow them to get inside of us. And we've talked about this in regards to Google Glass before, and some of the stuff that Kurzweil has said about connecting our neocortex to the cloud in the future. It's all in the name of the eyeball and that optic nerve. Keep electronics away from your eyeball. I've told you that before. Anytime they get near that eye has a direct connect to the brain. Well, look at this. This came out yesterday, March 13, 2017. In the first clinical trial set to begin this year, scientists have now created an artificial retina that could restore vision to millions. So again, this technology is rolled out to those of us who are desperate to begin with. To show you how wonderful it is, it's going to be a miraculous cure. Scientists have developed a retinal implant that can restore lost vision in rats, and they are now planning to trial this procedure in humans later this year. Now, remember, they already did brain implant surgery on National Geographic last year to show how they could cure something like Parkinson's disease, which, of course, is not enough dopamine in the brain, with a brain implant. And they're trying to normalize this baby step sippy cup, move forward to this transhumanized, embracing the machine future. They're going to make it normal for you to take technology inside of you to make you all better, Johnny. It doesn't make you less of a human. Hey, look at, we've been doing heart transplants and lung transplants and valve transplants for quite a number of years now. That never made grandpa less of a human. So what is a super bionic retinal implant or implantable Fitbits or Parkinson's curing brain implants going to do? Well, Johnny, it's not going to connect you to the machine. No, that's not what it's about. It's to cure you. It's to make you better. It's to make you more of a human again. You know, I mean, they're selling it that way. It's all in the name of curing you, making you live forever, making you healthier, making you better. But it's a double-edged sword. The implant, which converts light into an electrical signal that stimulates retinal neurons, could give hope to millions who experience retinal degeneration, including retinitis pigmentosa, in which the photoreceptor cells in the eye begin to break down, leading eventually to blindness. The retina is located right at the back of the eye. It is made up of millions of these light-sensitive photoreceptors. But mutations in any of the 240 identified genes can lead to retinal degeneration, where these photoreceptor cells die off, and even while retinal neurons around them are still unaffected. Well, guess what, guys? They have had a lot of success. They plan to carry out human trials in the second half of this year, 2017, and they're going to gather preliminary results all during 2018 to see how they work out. And this implant could be a turning point in the treatment of an extremely debilitating retinal disease. We will see how our simulation works on a biological level. And while there are no guarantees that the results we've seen in rats will translate into humans, this team is hopeful that it will. And from the sound of things, it won't be too long before we find out. All right, well, all in the name of curing you and keeping us safe, and this march towards transhumanism and towards this new 21st century computer-aided world of humans, nanoengineers are now 3D printing biomimetic blood vessel networks. Nanoengineers have a 3D printed lifelike functional blood vessel network that could pave the way toward artificial organs and other regenerative therapies. Remember, keeping you young and keeping you healthy will encourage many people who are resistant consumers still to step right up in their time of desperation. This new research addresses one of the biggest challenges in tissue engineering, creating lifelike tissues and organs that function with vasculature, and that is the networks of blood vessels that can transport blood, nutrients, waste, and other biological materials, and do so safely when implanted inside the body. Ding, 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 ding. And add to that, this new story, and we've talked about this, good old Peter Thiel. And I just found some new company that Peter Thiel's investment arm is invested in. We'll talk about them tomorrow. Questionable, quote-unquote, young blood transfusions, and that was that AKA parabiosis, offered in the U.S. as an anti-aging remedy. This is one of the remedies that, again, Peter Thiel, Mr. Vampire, was investing in just off a winding highway along the Pacific coast of Monterey, California, is a private clinic where people can pay $8,000 to have their veins pumped with blood plasma from teenagers and young adults. Jesse Kismarin is the entrepreneur who made the practice possible by launching a clinical trial on the potential of young blood through his startup company named Ambrosia. That almost makes me want to puke. Ambrosia, young blood, making the old young again. All right, guys, have an awesome Monday, Tuesday.